Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Friday, March the 11th. If you live in North Texas, I think you know that this is a winter advisory day. And I'm not sure what will happen today, but I know it's pretty chilly outside and they are expecting some precipitation in some parts of the area. So, but I don't think it'll be very bad, but it sure sounds to me like winter wants to say goodbye for the last time. So they've chosen 11th of March to make that point. So let's hope it's quick. Let's hope our streets are not bad and we can get spring going here as soon as possible. Today we're going to talk a little bit about a brand new Wall Street Journal poll that came out about President Biden. And you know, what it tells you is that he didn't get any bounce out of the State of the Union. Usually presidents will get a little bounce out of the State of the Union, and at least they have, because they have a chance to explain to the country what they want to do. Usually presidents get a little bounce when there is a foreign policy crisis, but in this particular one, he's not getting anything. In fact, he's starting to look pretty bad. So let's look at some of these numbers very quickly. These are the approval rates when you break them down in different categories. For example, with respect to the economy, he's at 39%. With respect to inflation, he's at 34%. With respect to leadership, this is a key one, leadership, he's at 41%. With respect to the border, this is a big problem, he's at 33%. And when it comes to crime, he's also at 33%. Now, to be fair, crime is more of a local issue, but I think the sense here is that he's not doing anything about it. He's not calling, for example, on the mayors of some of these cities to get tougher on crime, or even the governors of some of those states to get tougher on crime. So these numbers are absolutely devastating for President Biden, just totally, completely devastating for President Biden. And I think they reflect a sense in the country that he's lost control of the situation, or that the events are larger than the president. You know, we went through some of that at the end of the Carter presidency. That's, in a sense, that's what did Carter in. It wasn't so much the events. The events were bad. But it was the sense that he was not on top of the job, that the events were just too much for him to handle. And I think that's what we're starting to see with President Biden. When you see numbers like that, that tells you that 60%, sometimes more than 60% of the American people disagree with how he's handling issues that matter to them. And that's a bad sign for a president only in his second year, literally 14, 15 months into the presidency. He's having numbers like this. That's a pretty bad number. Now, what does that mean going forward? It means that he's got a couple of options. Option number one is do nothing and watch this train wreck bring down a bunch of Democrats in November. Option number two, he can fire a lot of people around him. He can change his team, change advisors, get different recommendations, and maybe he can at least salvage some of this. The problem, the big problem that he's having is that Ukraine is not really helping him. And what I mean by that is that usually Ukraine, when there's a foreign policy crisis like this, you know, people tend to rally around the president. But in this case, number one, there's really nothing that we can do in Ukraine more than what we're doing. I mean, what else are we going to do? We're not going to go to war with Russia over Ukraine. And as long as Putin stays within Ukraine, as long as he doesn't, go after, let's say, Poland or a country member of NATO, as long as he stays away from those countries, there's really more not much more than we can do other than these economic sanctions. The problem is that these economic sanctions do hit the American people. And we're seeing it with the quick rise in gasoline. Now, gasoline was going on before, so let's be fair about that. Inflation in gasoline had been building a year before Ukraine. But there's no question that Ukraine has upset the markets in such a way that it has driven up the price of gasoline to even higher levels. And of course, gasoline goes up, everything else goes up, food goes up, and all of that. So none of, you know, all of this seems to be happening all at once. And again, I go back to my example of the Carter presidency. This is exactly what brought down Jimmy Carter. It wasn't that Jimmy Carter didn't understand the problems. It's just that it didn't project to the American people that he understood the problem or that he was able to handle the problems. And that's, I think, what is happening to President Biden. The other thing is that this campaign, and I have a post about this at the American Thinker today, this campaign of blaming Putin for the price of gasoline is not working. It's not working. Because I think the American people are beginning to realize that the reason that Putin was able to do what he did or was encouraged to do what he did was not just because of the weakness being projected by the Biden administration, but also, frankly, because when we lost our energy independence, and now all of a sudden, Putin has money coming from energy, and now he has the ability to do what he couldn't do before. When gasoline was $40 a barrel, which is what it was, or oil was $40 a barrel, which is what it was at the end of the Trump presidency, Putin had fewer options. But when oil is $130 a gallon, Putin has a lot more options. So all of this is coming together in a very negative way for President Biden. And as I say, if you remember the Carter presidency, 79-1980, if you remember that, we're sort of watching a rerun of that right now with President Biden. Let's talk a little bit about Florida, because there's a controversy in Florida which I don't understand. Governor DeSantis signed into law a bill that basically says that teachers or schools, public schools that is, should not be teaching kids in first grade, second grade, or third grade. I mean, kids of that age shouldn't be talking to them at all about sexuality or gender issues. That's not what teachers ought to be doing in school, certainly not at that age. And there's this big opposition to the bill. Now, the bill was signed by the governor, so it is a law in Florida. But there's big opposition to the governor that somehow this bill discriminates against LGBT or whatever. And I don't see that. I don't see what the problem is. All that the bill does is say that schools should not be teaching about this, particularly to young kids. So if you're 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old, you shouldn't be hearing about sexuality in a public school. Now, if your parents want to teach you about that, that's a different story. That's for the parents to figure out, but not the teachers. And again, the reaction to this bill is just absolutely insane, because I don't see what the problem is. I, at one time, had three sons at that age who were going to school, and the last thing that I wanted my three sons to do in school was to learn about sexuality from a first grade or second grade or third grade or fourth grade teacher. No, that's not for the teachers to be doing. That's for the parents to be doing. But somehow, again, the reaction to this, it's just hysterical, just absolutely hysterical. They're talking about discrimination, and I don't understand why. We're not talking about anything other than no sexuality for kids of that age. If you find that offensive, I'm sorry. I don't get it. I don't understand. We're talking about kids of that age, and they shouldn't be talking about sex or hearing about sexuality from their parents or the public school system. They shouldn't be hearing it from private schools either, but of course, they operate on a different basis than the public schools when it comes to the role of government. Well, we do have some good news here to finish our week. Major League Baseball will be back. The players and the owners have finally signed an agreement. It looks like we're back. I was looking at some of the highlights of the new agreement. The designated hitter will now become universal, meaning there will be a designated hitter in the National League as well as the American League. You know, however you feel about the designated hitter, and I have mixed feelings about it, at least both leagues are playing by the same rules. I never understood that, where the American League had one set of rules and the National League had a different set of rules when it came to pitchers batting. So at least they're operating under the same rules. The other big change is going to be on increasing the number of teams in the postseason. I don't like that. I have to tell you, I don't like that. I like it the way it is right now, where you have three divisional winners and then two wild cards in each league. So that's what I like. But, you know, the players and the owners decided otherwise. But the best news is that baseball is back. They're supposed to be going to spring training, and the major league season will start on the 7th of April. And I'm happy about that because, as I said before, I understand, look, both sides are trying to maximize their position. I understand that. I don't have a beef with that. I hope they make as much money as they can make. But they also have to remember that arguing like this, and, you know, rather than playing baseball, is not good for the game. I've always argued that both sides should agree on what they agree on and then take the difference to an arbitrator and take whatever the arbitrator decides. But they don't. We go through this every 4 or 5 years, and it's not fun. It's ugly, but at least they got it done, and we've got Major League Baseball back on the schedule. And that's a good thing, as I said. That's a good thing, because the one thing about baseball that is different than the other sports is that baseball is a daily grind. So every single day you go to the sports page and you read about baseball for 6 months of the year, you've got baseball every single day. And at least for me, that's a lot of fun. If you don't like baseball, I understand that. But for me, having grown up as a baseball fan and loving the game, having baseball for 6 months every single day is something that makes life very interesting, especially at times like these when it just seems like everything has gone crazy, just completely crazy around the world. Just a couple of quick bits of information I wanted to pass on. We're going to be doing some future video cast or podcast with a friend of the family down in Mexico. We're going to be talking a little bit about what's happening down there with the president of Mexico and the members of the media. It's very interesting. Not good news, really, but it's very interesting. We're also going to be talking with a friend of mine who lives in Portugal, who's an author, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the impact of all of this stuff in Ukraine and the impact that this is having on the rest of Europe. You know, we hear about the NATO countries or the countries that border with Ukraine, but it's having an impact in other countries. So we'll get his perspective. He lives in Portugal, and I think you'll enjoy his perspective a great deal. Then, of course, on Monday, we'll do our weekly in review show with my friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. And somewhere in between that, we're also going to talk to my friend George Rodriguez, and we'll talk about politics in Texas. Now that the primaries are behind us, the real elections begin, although there are a couple of runoffs that are out there. And, of course, the biggest one is the one between the Attorney General Paxton and George Bush, those two. That's going to be a big one. That's going to be a big one. And we're not exactly sure who's going to win that one, because a lot depends on who endorses who among the candidates who didn't qualify for the runoff. And the other big runoff, the other one that gets national attention, is going to be the one down in District 28 between Representative Cuellar and his challenger, Jessica Cisneros. And that's going to be interesting, because that really shows you the divisions within the Democrat Party, Cuellar being more of a centrist Democrat and Cisneros coming from the left. And this is a major division in the Democrat Party that could have impact in November, because the people in the Democrat Party who lose these primaries, are they going to show up to vote? That's a question. Nobody really has an answer to that, but that's another indication of some of the problems in the Democrat Party. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. I hope you survive our last winter advisory. I think you will. And we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody. Have